This is a question that I try to ask. In the old framework, in the old way to view string theory, the answer to this question is that string theory provides a framework for unification, including gravity. It contains naturally n equal 1 supersymmetry, and this framework is much more restrictive than grand unified theories. The main context was the heterotic string theory, which was a very nice theory and safe, but very far from the TEV region where actual accelerator physics is done. And it separates the physics in two regimes, roughly at the Planck scale. The regime where string theory becomes important, and below the Planck scale, essentially you have an effective field theory with boundary conditions which are set up by the particular string, heterotic string vacuum. However, with the more recent developments, our point of view it changed, and in fact, it may be across the corner. There are maybe new large dimensions, and the quantum gravity to become strong at low energies. Maybe black hole productions in accelerators. In addition, you can have modification of gravitational forces at sub-millimeter distances, which can be detecting non-accelerator experiments. Now, the disadvantage of this new way of thinking is that the separation becomes... there is no almost separation between the weak scale and the string scale. So the string scale is uncomfortably close to where we live, and therefore it's a challenge to readdress most of the old problems to see if such a possibility can be realized. So what I will talk is this is from some bigger some lectures that I have given. I will select some topics. I will start by describing the various possibilities in various perturbative descriptions of string theory to lower the string scale, starting from the heterotic. I will not talk about M theory, I will talk about type 1 prime strings, which will require extra large transverse dimensions. Then I will discuss type 2 theories, where there is a new possibility of lowering the string scale by introducing a tiny string coupling. And I will discuss these realizations, these perturbative realizations, either as type 1 or as type 2, how they are related to the by duality to the heterotic string, which is strongly coupled in this regime. And then I would like to discuss some problems which relate to physics, the problem of gauge hierarchy in this context, unification of gauge couplings, and breaking. So, the method to the easiest method to discuss the mass scales in string theory is to start with the 10-dimensional parameters, which are the string scale or the string length, and the string coupling constant, but it's given with expectation value of the dilaton, and then compactify on a manifold of volume, some volume V, into four dimensions. And relate these 10-dimensional parameters to the four-dimensional ones, which is the four-dimensional Planck scale, the gauge coupling, and of course the volume of the quantification will enter, and discuss it for every particular string theory, heterotic, type 1 and type 2. We'll impose two conditions that we want at every time. The first is the weak coupling condition, that the string coupling at the given description is perturbative. And the second is that the compactification volume is bigger than 1 in string units. Otherwise, if it is smaller than one, then one can use the t-duality to account for the light winding modes, because if the volume of the compactification is less than one, then the winding modes of the closed string part will become very light, and their density will increase, in fact, the string coupling, and this is what the t-duality does. And I will skip the factors, the numerical factors. So let me just remind you the situation of the heterotic string is that gauge and gravitational interactions appear at the same level, at the tree level, which corresponds to the world seat with spherical topology. And this automatically fix you, as a consequence, it fix you the string scale to be proportional to the Planck mass with proportionality, which is the gauge coupling. If, in addition, you assume that the string coupling is bigger than one, then there is no much room to play. You find that the volumes have to be, the internal volume has to be of the string size, and the heterotic string scale is high. Now, this is, there was recently an exception to this to this rule. If you don't rely to perturbative gauge groups, but you take into account non-perturbative gauge groups which come even at weak coupling from small instantons, there was a work of Oz and Benacli, who also avoid, who can realize low-scale heterotic string by taking into account this non-perturbative gauge symmetries. Now, despite of this, there are physical motivations that even in the heterotic strings, they suggest that maybe large volume compactifications are relevant for physics. The one comes from the unification of gauge couplings to account from for the discrepancy of, let's say, two orders of magnitude between the string scale and the unification scale. And the other came from the problem of supersymmetry breaking, which require even in the string context, which require even a dimension which is much larger at the TV energies. Now, the main problem, of course, of this was the in heterotic string was the strong coupling in 10 dimensions. Back in the 90s, they were trying to avoid this problem by imposing conditions to effective couplings in order to avoid them from growing. One condition, for instance, which has to do with the gauge couplings is to impose that the Kaluza-Klein excitations come into multiples of n equal 4 supersymmetry, which can be realized in orbifold models. Now, we know that this strong coupling problem can be addressed using string dualities by going into the, which reverse the string coupling and go to the dual description. And in fact, a strongly coupled heterotic string can be described either by type 1 or type 1 prime theory or type 2 theory, or in general in M theory. For instance, as I will describe later, is that if you take a heterotic string with one large dimension, then this theory, which is strongly coupled, has a perturbative description as a type 2B theory, whose string scale appears at the geometric mean of the string scale and the compactification scale. So if you take the compactification scale at the TP, at the TV, the type 2B string scale will appear at the intermediate energies. And this type 2B has a weak coupling. However, gauge interactions appear non-perturbatively because the compactification of the internal manifold is singular. Now, you can ask what happens in the energy regime above the compactification scale and below the type 2B string scale. In this region, where couplings naively blow up, there is the theory is described by some non-trivial fixed point of a higher dimensional theory, which is a sort of low energy theory of a tensionless string, up to n equal 2. In this example, you can have up to n equal 2. N equal 2 in four dimensions, yeah. 8. Now, if you start putting more large dimensions, I will describe this example a little bit more in detail. If you have more than two large dimensions, then you find that the scale of the dual theory, which here it was at the intermediate scale, goes down to the compactification scale, and therefore automatically you encounter low scale, I mean TV strings. So in general, in all the other descriptions that I will describe, the string scale is an arbitrary parameter. So it can be anywhere up to the TV. Now, putting the string scale at the TV, it has the nice motivation that it can be accounted for automatic solution of the Gates hierarchy problem as an alternative to low energy supersymmetry. So let me then start with type 1 theory, or more general type 1 prime, because I will allow to do T dualities in various directions. So we'll have the setup here is that the standard model will live in a collection of D-brains, and we have some direction, among the six internal dimensions, some of them are longitudinal to the D-brains where we live, and some of them are transverse. So when we write again the relations between the ten-dimensional parameters and the four-dimensional ones, and impose the weak coupling condition for the type 1 coupling, you find that the longitudinal volume, the compactification volume along the D-brains where we live, has to be of order of the string scale, otherwise the string coupling becomes strong, as for the heterotics. However, there is no condition for the transverse dimensions. And this allows for the possibility to separate the four-dimensional Planck scale from the string scale by introducing extra large transverse dimensions, which are felt only by gravity, by the closed string interactions. And although keeping the string coupling to be perturbative, to be given by the Gates coupling. So in this scenario, you can allow to dimensions from 2 up to 6, because the 1 is excluded. It requires a size of the solar system. But from 2 up to 6, one finds that the transverse dimensions can vary between the millimeter and the Fermi. And this is possible because simply gravity was tested at short distances up to the centimeter. There are, of course, more stringy bounds which come from astrophysics and cosmology that people have studied. Now, in this setup of open strings, one can, in principle, imagine that the natural scale of the natural scale of string theory has to be less than the intermediate scale in order to guarantee that the supersymmetry breaking is less than 1 TV. The reason is that if you imagine some generic type 1 vacuum with many type of brains, some of them could be non-supersymmetric. If they are non-supersymmetric, on those brains, supersymmetry is broken at the string scale. So if we live there, of course, the string scale has to be at the TV. If we live in some other brain which is supersymmetric, then we'll feel the breaking by gravitational interactions. And in order to assure that this breaking is less than 2 TV, the string scale has to be less than intermediate energies. So this was, in fact, an argument by Banyas in Strings 99. So let me discuss a bit the relation of this setup with a heterotic string which is strongly coupled. So assume that we start with a heterotic theory with some n dimensions larger than the string scale and 6 minus n at the order of a string scale. So normalize the string scale to 1 and put n dimensions here much larger than the string scale. This theory is strongly coupled. So in principle, you can say, okay, I can use type 1 heterotic duality to describe, to find a perturbative description of all these cases. Now, this does not work quite, and the reason is the following, that when you do this S duality, you find that the type 1 scale will appear somewhere here, and in all cases, there are some dimensions which are left over and which are less than this type 1 string scale, string length. Since these dimensions are smaller, the closed string states, there are very light winding modes, one has to do a t-duality to take into account for their multiplicity. By doing a t-duality, the string coupling increase, one goes to type 1 prime and the string coupling increase. So in general, it's not clear, it's not obvious that you can describe by type 1 heterotic duality any perturbative heterotic vacuum of this type. In fact, it is easy to convince yourself that you can describe perturbatively only the situations in which the heterotic string has more than four large dimensions. Now, this analysis of, is for toroidal compactifications, of course. For other compactifications, maybe there are other cases. For instance, when these are the cases of the start with a heterotic string with four, six, or five large dimensions. For instance, I just described the four as an example. So we start with a heterotic string with four dimensions, let's say, large here. Then one finds that the type 1 string scale appears at the compactification scale, and there are two small dimensions of heterotic size, which are much smaller than the type 1 string scale, and these are t-dual to two extra large dimensions, which become transverse. So this theory, this heterotic theory with four large dimensions, is equivalent to type 1 prime with a D7 brain and two transverse dimensions. Now, if this is the TEV, then this one is the millimeter. And okay, similarly, you can describe the situations n equal 5 and n equal 6. No, this is for supersymmetric compactifications. The breaking of supersymmetry has to be understood, I would say, on the side where the string is quickly coupled. And okay, I will discuss a bit the breaking at the end. Now, let's go now to type 2 string theories. Type 2 strings have no gauge groups. In order to obtain non-trivial interest in physics, you have to assume a non-trivial compactification, which is singular. And in that case, non-abelian symmetries appear non-perturbatively, and they are localized, the singularities of the internal manifold. For instance, if you take a K3, that's the simplest case, in six dimensions, then when the K3 becomes singular, you have D2 brains which wrap around the collapsing cycles of the singular K3, two cycles, and give rise to the gauge groups in six dimensions. And, okay, then you can compactify to four, or you can go from K3 K3 vibrations to describe to Calabi-Yau compactifications, which are K3 vibrations. So the setup here is that we have the gauge symmetries, which the gauge groups, which live on five brains, which have the properties of Nevers-Schwarz five brains. There are two dimensions, two dimensions of the five brain, which are compactified, and four transverse. Now the scaling again changes, because now the gauge interactions appear non-perturbatively, so they do not have if any factor of the string coupling, while gravitational interactions have as before. And after compactification to four dimensions, one finds that the gauge couplings are determined by the size of the two torus along the five brain, they are independent from the string coupling, which appears though in the Planck mass. So this gives you an additional, this gives you an alternative possibility to lower the string scale or explain it and separate it from the Planck mass by introducing a super weak string coupling. For instance, I can take all the dimensions, all the radii, the internal radii of the order of the string scale, let's say of the order of the TeV, and introduce a string coupling which is tiny, 10 to the minus 14, in order to account for the ratio between the string scale and the four-dimensional Planck mass. So that is the extreme, the other extreme case, and you can extrapolate between the two by starting increasing the string coupling and introducing transverse dimensions along the four, which are transverse to the five brain, and you can make it as large as Fermi scale, where the string coupling is one, by keeping always the string scale at the TV. The difference, the main physical difference between this possibility and the scenario of transverse dimensions is that in this case the gravity becomes does not become strong at the TV. Although you have low string scale, gravitational interactions as well as string interactions are controlled by the string coupling, which is very small, and therefore they are suppressed. However, there are Kaluza-Klein states of gauge interactions along the two dimensions of the five brain, which are parallel to the five brain, and these give rise to additional physics, of course, which have to do with the Kaluza-Klein excitation. Yes, but you cannot see the string tower, you cannot see, they are very weakly coupled. String theory is very weakly coupled. Gauge interactions are strong because they appear non-perturbatively from the singularities of the internal mass. I would say no, but this is one of the problems of this scheme that I don't know how to to compute. There is no a perturbative framework to go beyond the massless spectrum. And then. I would say that these states are also controlled by gauge interactions. I think on the type 2B, if you go on the type 2B side, is more interesting from this point of view, because you can start to push the string scale to, up compared to the compactification scale, and therefore you have some regime in which string physics is really decoupled, and the question is what is the theory which describes this higher dimensional regime. In fact, this can be done, for instance, here. Okay, here we have the conditions again. Before I assume that both directions along the five brain have the string size. However, you can take one of them to be bigger than the string size, to be big, and the other one to be small. In order to treat this case, you have to do a T-duality in the small direction and go to the type 2B. And, of course, rescale the string coupling. Now, by doing this, you find that you obtain new relations, that the gauge coupling now is not given by the size of the two torus along the five brain, but by the complex structure, by the ratio of the two radii. While in the Planck mass, there is also this the longitudinal dimensions along the five brain which appear. Now, this scheme has provides a different possibility only if, because it allows you to start moving the string scale above the compactification scale. And this compactification scale is very different. It's not a transverse direction. It's longitudinal dimensions felt by gauge interactions. So you can ask what happens in that case, what is the regime where you have gauge interactions and no gravity. And the answer is provided by the type 2B theory. And the reason is that on the type 2B side, you don't have D2 brains, you have D3 brains, which are wrapped around the collapsing cycles of K3 in that case, and then they produce tensionless strings. So in that regime, the theory is controlled by the tensionless strings, which are theories with no gravity and give rise to non-trivial infrared fixed points. So this is an interesting also regime in which can be studied. No, they have the property of Nevesky Sforza V brain. These are the ordinary type 2B, let's say, compactifications on Calabi-Yau manifolds, which are K3 vibrations.
It's dual, right?
Right, it's RT dual to the other K. Yeah.
Okay, so it's the geometry, not the
Nevesky
Sforza.
Yeah, it's the geometry.
Right.
I agree. Yeah, the Nevesky Sforza 5 brain of type 2A is like type 2B. Now, using this type 2 theories, you can ask the question. You can address the question to whether we can describe now perturbatively the three cases which we left over from the heterotic, in which you have one, two, or three large dimensions, by using heterotic type 2 duality. Which is an F duality in six dimensions by inverting the six dimensional coupling. Now, there is a first a prior question to answer is how the T4 is mapped to K3, because the heterotic is compactified on T4, type 2 is compactified to K3, so this map, these relations are not sufficient. You have to show how the T4 is mapped to K3. This can be done through the M theory, and okay, I don't want to enter in the details. The outcome is that one particular direction of the K3, if you take a squashed K3, which is isomorphic to an interval times a T3, there is a particular direction of K3 which is mapped to the volume of T4. And vice versa, the volume of K3 is mapped to a particular direction in T4. Now, using this this mapping, one can indeed show that type 2 provides a perturbative description for this for the heterotic string with one, two, or three large dimensions. The one is the first one that I mentioned already in the beginning. The second is the type 2 with an infinitesimal coupling given by the inverse compactification radius, because when you start with two large dimensions, then the type 2 scale and all the scales of the theory appear at the compactification scale, but the string coupling is tiny, type 2 coupling is tiny, and the N equals 3 is some intermediate setup. So I would like now to, I don't know if you have questions at this moment. I would like to start discussing some problems which relate to the physics of this. So the first one has to do with Gates hierarchy, as I mentioned. Now the Gates hierarchy, which is the question of why the Planck mass is much bigger than the weak scale, is translated in this scenario with the question of why there are extra large transverse dimensions or infinitesimal string coupling. I will discuss mainly that, I will discuss only the transverse dimensions which discuss type 1 prime string theory, in fact. So you have to in order to explain a ratio which is 10 to the 15, by introducing transverse dimensions, you have again to introduce some large number, which is the size of the extra dimensions relative to the string scale, and which varies for two dimensions. It's essentially the same ratio to explain. For six dimensions, it goes 10 to the 5. Still, is a large number to explain. Now, this problem has two aspects. The first is the real dynamical question of how the theory can compactify by providing transverse dimensions which are larger than a string scale. Prior to this, there is a technical aspect which is also the problem that supersymmetry, softly broken supersymmetry solves. And this is to assume that you have a non-supersymmetric string type 1 string vacuum, type 1 prime string vacuum, in which by hand I pose some transverse dimensions much larger than the string scale. The question is whether this is stable under radiative corrections, string loop corrections. In other words, whether the brain theory, whether the standard model which lives on the brain, and it has effective couplings on the brain, they acquire large corrections which depend on the ratio of the transverse dimension to the string length. This is equivalent to look at the decoupling limit, what happens when I try to send the transverse space to infinity, to the theory on the brain. Now, the answer is that in general, this limit cannot be taken, and transverse space does not decouple if the effective dimensionality of the bulk is less or equal to 2. I will explain in a moment what I mean by effective dimensionality. Now, the reason for this is that you can emit closed strings in the tadpoles, in the bulk. So imagine any physical process. Here is the brain, and the green lines are vertex operators corresponding to open string states, which have only longitudinal momentum along the brain. The brain is here. And then any such physical amplitude, you can have the emission of closed string in the bulk, which have only transverse momentum. And since the transverse momentum is not conserved in the transverse space, this diagram is not general zero. Now, the problem appears either as an infrared problem, if I look at it from the closed string part, because this diagram gives rise to local tadpoles in the transverse space of massless closed strings, which in general lead to infrared divergences. But if I look at it from the theory of the brain point of view, they involve a loop integral, and I will see ultraviolet divergences, which in general with a cutoff which is different from the string scale. So this ultraviolet divergences can be computed more easily as a local tadpole. I have to do an integral, or more precisely a sum, over the transverse momenta, which are quantized because the transverse is compact. And then I have the propagator, 1 over p transverse square, times the tadpole, which is an amplitude, and which, for instance, in the simplest case of toroidal compactifications, if I introduce 2 to some power dimensionality of orientifolds, then the global double cancellation tells me that I have to introduce 32 D9 minus D transverse DT brains, okay, because I have done some D transverse dualities. And I obtain a tadpole which has a contribution from the locations of the orientifolds, plus a negative contribution which comes from from the D brains, which are located at some arbitrary point in the transverse state. Now this sum is easy to do, and convinced that there are linear divergences in the case of D transverse equal 1, which grow linearly with the radius, or logarithmic divergences in the case where D transverse is equal to 2, while for the cases where the transverse dimensionality is bigger than 2, it's finite. I mean, the way to understand these divergences is because from field theory, if the transverse space is one-dimensional, then the propagator grows linearly. If it is two-dimensional, then it grows logarithmically. Now, you understand that even if I have more than two transverse dimensions, if this compactification space is not isotropic, and I have, for instance, higher dimensional brains that extend partially in the transverse space, so that they allow effective propagation of bulk fields in less than two dimensions, I still have the same kind of divergences. So now the question is how we can avoid this. There are several possibilities. One possibility is to impose local tadpole cancellation. which can be done, of course, if I choose the position of the brains in a way to cancel locally the charge of the antifolds. This is possible in some models, but they give severe constraints. The otherwise, in the case of one dimension, I have linear divergences, as I mentioned. Now, these linear divergences are bad because it will appear in general for any kind of effective coupling that you look at. And in general, the theory will account to strong coupling singularities, which will forbid the transverse radius to take values much larger than the string scale. And the first phenomenon of this type was discussed by Witten in the context of M-theory on Calabi-Yacob actifications in an asymmetric way between the two EAs. Now, the most interesting case, in my opinion, is the D-transverse equal 2, where you have logarithmic divergences. And these logarithmic divergences they are very similar to the situation in renormalizable field theories. The first is that these divergences can be absorbed into a finite number of parameters, which correspond to the values of the bulk massless fields at the position of the brain. The reason is that all the couplings all the effective couplings of the Gates theory, which lives on the brain, are determined by bulk fields. The values of the bulk fields are the position of the brains. Since there are a finite number of bulk fields, there are a finite number of parameters that I can absorb these logarithmic divergences. So this is very similar to renormalizable field theory. The second property is that this logarithmic divergence can be resummed by replacing the normalization group equation in field theories by classical supergravity equations in the two dimensions transverse to the brain. Why classical? Because the fields vary logarithmically and therefore higher derivatives are suppressed. So I can use the classical equations in order to resum just the logs. So this is very interesting because it gives you a way to understand the second aspect of the hierarchy, the dynamical aspect, by, for instance, the nice thing about it is that the theory on the brain is not decoupled from the bulk, but there is a logarithmic sensitivity. And once you have a logarithmic sensitivity, then you may hope to determine the hierarchy by minimizing, for instance, an effective potential, which depends only by logs. And there have been some recent works in the literature about how you can use this idea. Now the second application of these logs, the problem that I want to discuss, is the question of unification. One of the problems that people, I think, do not feel comfortable about this idea of bringing down the string scale is what happens to the unification of Gates couplings, which fits so nicely in the supersymmetric theories. And the first idea was which was discussed was based on a power running. The idea was to introduce some dimension which is a bit larger than the string scale. The multiplicity of the Kaluza-Klein states lead to a power a sort of power running of the coupling, and these people observed that if you take the standard model and you extend it to n equal 2, which is the supersymmetry of Kaluza-Klein excitations in a supersymmetric theory, and you make some minimal choice, which is to assume that the Gates fields have vector multiplets and the two Higgses are form n equal 2 hypermultiplets, then the beta functions are very close to those of the MSSM, and the couplings continue to unify. However, the main problem in this approach is that since the evolution is power, there is a lot of sensitivity, power-like sensitivity, and therefore the string threshold corrections are very important. So It's difficult to imagine how you can have a real prediction. So the alternative possibility is to use these logs in case of two transverse dimensions. So take, for instance, the case that you have really two transverse dimensions, then the ratio of the string scale to the size of the transverse space is exactly as the ratio of the unification scale to the TV scale, which gives you an effective unification scale, which could be identified with this super heavy scale of the winding modes of the open string. So the idea, the thing here is that one has to study how the gauge couplings depend on this. What are the coefficients of these logarithms? Now, this was a work I have done this summer by computing the threshold corrections to n equal 1 orientifolds, and found that the logs, in fact, are controlled by the n equal 2 beta functions. In fact, the idea is the following. First of all, let me tell you what's the result. The result is the following. The gauge couplings, depending on the group, has two contributions. One contribution is a three-level contribution. This 1 over z squared is the expectation value of the dilaton, so forget for the moment this term. I will describe it in a moment. And then you obtain a one-loop correction, which is determined by the beta function coefficients of the n equal 2 sectors of how the standard model is extended at the n equal 2 level. And here you have the threshold corrections. Ti is the size. T is the size of... I assume two transverse dimensions, so T is the size, the product of the two radii, and U is the ratio of the two. So if U is of order 1, I find a log with a coefficient which is a beta function. Now, if U is large, in other words, if one dimension is larger than the other, then this function, which is the logarithm of the Dedekind function, behaves linearly. And this is the usual linear divergence that you expect when you have one divergence. So I take two radii of the same order, and you have these logs with coefficient which is the n equal 2 beta function. Now, the first surprise was that prior to this, there is an additional dependence at the tree level. And these m's are twisted moduli. Okay, here I'm discussing n equal 1 orientifolds, so they are based on type 2b orbifolds. And these orbifolds, they have twisted moduli associated to the fixed points of the orbifolds, the so-called blowing up modes, which blow up the singularities of the orbifold. Now, these blowing up modes couple in a non-universal way to the various gates groups of the same collection of brains, with coefficients, in fact, which depend on the group. This is very important because, you see, if I didn't have such a correct, if the three-level couplings didn't have such a term, they would determine only by the one bulk field, then from the supergravity point of view, where the renormalization of the couplings can be understood as a renormalization of the value of the bulk field, you should obtain the same correction for all the gauge couplings of the standard model. In fact, that was one of the problems that is related to how to use these logs in order to unify the couplings. However, here we have this additional dependence, which is not universal, and therefore these corrections can be understood by shifting not to this field, but the twisted field. Now, these parameters are proportional to the n equal 2 beta functions. They have to be proportional because this correction should be understood from the supergravity point of view as the renormalization of the bulk fields due to the sources, to the distant sources, due to the orientifolds and the brains and the other brains far away. There is, however, an additional problem that classically these fields are flat directions. So if they remain flat directions, of course, there is no reason to discuss loop corrections because here already you have big corrections. And that's what happens in n equal 2 compactification. However, the nice thing about N equal to 1 or antifolds is that this twisted moduli acquire potential. The reason is that the theory has anomalous U1s, and the anomalies are cancelled by the phases of which are associated to this twisted moduli by generalized Green-Schwarz mechanism, because the phases is absorbed by the Gates field. These M fields appear in the potential. They have D terms, and if you impose the D terms to vanish without breaking the Gates symmetries, then you are forced to put zero the verse of these fields, of these twisted fields, and therefore unification is restored. The principle of unification. Now, of course, you have to the disadvantage is that you have to understand the unification not with the actual n equal 1 beta functions, but with the n equal 2 beta functions, how the standard model is extended at n equal 2. But in principle, it gives you a different rationale for unification, which is based on logarithms and not on power running. Okay, the other comment, the last comment I want to say about this is that this discussion is done in the context of supersymmetric compactifications, n equal 1 or antifolds. Now, in the context of this scenario, one should not rely on supersymmetry. So, in principle, one has to understand to extend this analysis in non-supersymmetric type 1 compactifications, and maybe this can provide can escape this constraint of the n equal 2. How long do I have? Oh. Yeah. Okay. So now the last thing I want to discuss is the problem of supersymmetry breaking. So as I mentioned before, if you have if you satisfy the requirement that the effective propagation of bulk fields is not more than 2, is not more than logarithmic, then as far as the renormalization of the effective couplings of the Brehm theory is concerned, non-supersymmetric type 1 strings, type 1 prime strings at the TV give the same solution to the problem of the Gates hierarchy as low energy supersymmetry, in the sense that the corrections to the low energy couplings are at most logarithmic. Now, can ask for non-supersymmetric string theories.
For 2.
Yes. For 2 or more.
Or more, it's not.
But then it's at all. I mean, you don't have corrections at all. Okay. Now, in the case of 2 transitive dimensions, you have logarithmic sensitivity. Right, yeah. So that's why I prefer to talk about logarithmic.
So you're just
yeah.
2 transitive dimensions.
That is that's my preference. No, because okay, I don't know. Maybe since I have not yet a clear, I presented the rationale for unification, but I don't have yet to propose some concrete alternative to. I will discuss it now. That's what I will discuss now. But before discuss the kind of breaking, let me discuss the question of the cosmological constant. Now, if you have a non-supersymmetric string model, then the bulk cosmological constant that you will get just by power counting is the string scale to the appropriate power, 4 plus p if you have p extra dimensions, large dimensions. Now, this bulk cosmological constant will give rise to a projection on the Brehm, which is enhanced by the volume of the transverse space. If you translate this in terms of four-dimensional parameters, you get back quadratic divergences in terms of the Planck mass to the vacuum energy on the Brehm. So this is analog of the quadratic divergences to the cosmological constant in softly broken supersymmetry, and it's amazing that even in this respect, these non-square symmetric strings have the same a priori, the same level of gives you the same level of control, the divergences as softly broken supersymmetry. Now, however, okay, if you have a quadratic, a huge cosmological constant now in the drain, which is bigger than the string scale, then this destabilizes the whole scenario. So we should impose as a condition that this divergence is not there, the absence of quadratic sensitivity, which implies that, if I impose that the brain, the cosmological constant of the brain is m string to the 4 power, then this implies that at the bulk I have a very light, very small cosmological constant, or supersymmetry breaking. Now, there are two solutions that you can imagine. The first is to construct non-supersymmetric string models which have vanishing vacuum energy. Now, there are some examples that people have argued that, at least for closed string models, that the cosmological constant vanish up to 2 loops and maybe they vanish perturbatively, which is enough for this purpose. This is something which I don't think there is any explanation, any understanding what is the reason for this. Now, there is an alternative way to guarantee this condition by imposing that the supersymmetry is approximate in the bulk and it is broken only in the brain. So the thing that I wanted then to discuss, the scenario is that supersymmetry is broken on the brain even maximally at the string scale. But at the bulk, is three level is exact, and then it becomes broken, but it will be very suppressed by the volume of the transverse space. Now, how you can break supersymmetry on the brain in type one theory? Now, non-supersymmetric. You can imagine various ways to break supersymmetry by invoking either intersection of brains which are non-supersymmetric or rotating brains. The question is how to implement these configurations in type one string theory. So, one way to implement this configuration string theory, but not to be to have a choice to break supersymmetry, but to break it by the consistency, to be forced to break it, is by inverting the charges of the orientifolds, the construction that you start for time 2b. So imagine, usually you start with type 2b and you project you. By doing some orientifold projection, you introduce in type 1, let's say, on 9 and 5 orientifold planes, which require, by charge conservation, to introduce open strings which live on D9 and D5 brains. However, imagine a situation in which the charges of the orientifold planes, or the 05, for instance, orientifold planes, is reversed. Then, in order for tautological cancellation, you have to introduce anti-D5 brains instead of 5 brains. But anti-D5 brains with 9 brains necessarily break supersymmetry in the intersection, and this intersection coincides with the world volume of the D5 brain. So this is this gives you some principle, at least in these models, that you are forced to break supersymmetry by consistency of the theory, because otherwise there is no any other solution to tautological cancellations. You mean it's not dynamic then? Yeah, but it's a non-supersymmetric string theory with broken supersymmetry on the brain. That's what this is sufficient for this purpose. You don't need to invoke non-perturbative effects if the string scale is at the TV. So the easiest example to imagine is the T4 over Z2, or orbifold, orientifold, the usual T4 over Z2, and just change the omega projection in the twisted sector. This inverts the charge of the all five planes, and forces to introduce 32 or 16, that depends how to count, D5 brains, anti-D5 brains, instead of the ordinary supersymmetric solution with 16 five brains. This model has a twisted sector which has a has a closed string sector which has 17 tensor multiplets, and supersymmetry is broken on the five brains. Another example is the four-dimensional one, a Z2 cross Z2 with discrete torsion. This also, the discrete torsion has the same effect, to change the charge of the orientifolds and forces to break supersymmetry. Now the main properties that, so you, first of all, you can cancel the Ramon tadpoles, and therefore you can verify that these theories that you produce have no anomalies. Moreover, they have no tachyons because you don't have brains at the brains of the same type, but are 9 with 5 bars, so there are no tachyons. Supersymmetry is broken on the wall volume of D5 brains. Because supersymmetry is broken, there is a potential, a three-level potential, which is localized on the wall volume of these five brains, since supersymmetry is broken. So these are the characteristic properties of these models. Now, on top of it, you can also start adding brain and the brain pairs. In this case, you can introduce tachyons, but the tachyons are charged, and you can lift them by Wilson lines or separation of the brain. So recently, some people started doing the Madrid group, Banes and collaboration, started doing model building by using non-supersymmetric type 1 vacuum where supersymmetry is broken on the brain, and apparently they give much more flexibility to produce models. For instance, they have examples of the standard model with three generations, which tells you that there is at least you have more flexibility of model building this way. Just the spectrum. No, just the spectrum. Just the gauge.
What do you mean by three families?
I think they have standard model times extra U1s, and they have three families of the standard model. Now, if you ask if these are realistic, I don't think. Okay, because if they start asking if they have problem with proton decay, if they have couplings, just examples, because it turns out that at least with ordinary orientifolds, even to get three generations was a problem. And this shows just by construction that you can avoid very easily at least this part of things.
Loops,
you have to be careful, okay, because supersymmetry is broken on the brain, so at some point it will start generating divergence. But that is the usual problem. I mean, any time that you break supersymmetry, you will generate cosmological constant, it will generate divergence, so you have to deal with it, with a cosmological constant. But that depends what is your point of view, but you can, the philosophy here is that this problem of divergence and the cosmological constant maybe has some different origin. I mean, has some solution which has to be understood independently of addressing other issues, okay, other problems.
Where?
I don't know. That. I mean, okay, we can try to solve all the problems at the same time.
You said that the cosmological constant manages to
at the in the bulk. You have a potential on the brain. There is a non-zero cosmological constant. It's a potential. Now, these potentials, as usually, if you well, they are run away with respect to the dilaton. Okay? So that's a, I mean, there is no some better, understanding of the problems of the stabilization of the dilaton and the cosmological constant. They just give you examples that of strict vacuum, which realize this breaking, brain breaking of supersymmetry, and at least guarantee the hierarchy of the transverse dimensions, but they don't solve other problems. At least in this example.
Say anything about the one-loop contribution to the cosmological constant?
The contribution that we'll get
suppressed by the volume of the transverse space. You will get a non-zero, of course, but...
You think it's the non-zero?
I will, yeah. Okay, I didn't do it, but I'm pretty sure that you will get a non-zero. So the conclusion is that supersymmetry may be not there in our world because we live on a non-supersymmetric plane, but it may exist a millimeter away in the bulk. So we don't need supersymmetry to protect the Gates hierarchy from Gates interactions, but we may need it from gravitational interactions. So that's the philosophy. And of course, this gives you again the possibility to have new forces in the sub-millimeter scale, because exactly supersymmetry is very is almost exact in the bulk, and therefore, if you have moduli scalars and so on, these scalars are light, have masses which are suppressed by the Planck scale, so, and they correspond to wavelengths of the millimeter, and they can mediate forces at the millimeter. Now, there is a question, in order to mediate these observable forces, they have to couple to nucleons, for instance, with order with strong coupling, order one relative to gravity. You see that in order to obtain non-zero couplings, not irrelevant couplings, you must have, if I take, for instance, as a modulus, this the modulus is associated to the size of the bulk, then we need to have, again, models with logarithmic sensitivity. Otherwise, the coupling is zero. So again, for this, the models which have logarithmic sensitivity predict, in general, that there are new forces in the bulk, which can be detected experimentally because they are in the range of experimental fields. Okay, I think I will finish here.
Therefore, estimates of the scale for the strong relativity from astrophysical.
This is,
are you still sticking to the 1 millimeter?
First of all, this is when you have strictly speaking to just two dimensions. And this bound is a bound for the six-dimensional effective Planck scale. Now, the relation between this Planck scale and the string scale, there is a coupling constant, which the string coupling which enters. So still it gives you, what I'm saying is that still this can correspond to a string scale of about 10 TeV. So it does not rule out completely. This comes from a supernova. This is one the emission of gravitons from the supernova. This is not the most stringiest, though. The most stringiest I understood is has to do with the distribution of photons from in any case Larry Hall and from Berkeley and some collaborators. But already the supernova gives you, I think, 50 TeV for the higher dimensional, for the six-dimensional Planck scale, which is translated to. I mean, these people did the calculation for the supernova, and which is translated to about 7 TeV for the type 1 string scale. And the reason is that you have this coupling with the
beauty. So 50 TeV.
50 TeV for the six-dimensional Planck mass, and because the Planck mass with the string scale, there is this one over g-square. There is a g-square factor involved, the string coupling, the Gates coupling. If the Gates coupling is perturbative, then it's about 5 to 10, depends how. It's about the limit. It's about the limit. Now, it's not only the question of the string scale, it's the question of what are the also the extra dimensions, no? Because there may be dimensions which are a bit larger than the string scale. If okay, I don't have, I didn't bring the you know the analysis, the experimental well, graviton emission in the bulk. So missing energy, Z, production of missing energy plus Z. And many people have done computations using effective field theory, basically. And the limit is about, you know, it's about 5, 7, I don't know, the string scale. Depends how many extra dimensions you have.
Picture, pretty, I mean, if this is, if you're correct, means you also have a
difference. And you want barely, you want anything that I like to see.
And you rely on people who do gravity experiments. Notoriously.
You know, everything is in the border, so I don't.
Well, no, I'm just asking in a provocative way, if that's correct.
If it is just, yeah, if it happens, if you have just two dimensions, which are.
But you know, given your optimal.
Yeah. Then yeah, it looks at the border. I agree.
You hope you're wrong. Okay.
No, on the other hand, well, I think that I'm not sure how really you can trust, I mean, up to the, you know, what is the precision of all these bounds that people get.
Well,
because people use effective field theory. So the question is...
Worse all the time, not better.
Yeah. Yeah. So there are several questions that can be addressed at the string scale, okay? For instance, this thing, okay, people say that you can produce black holes maybe in accelerators, okay? I'm not sure. I mean, even this question has to be really examined at the string theory. Suppose that really the string scale is low, then what's the probability to produce a TV black hole? Okay, it's not clear that you can produce. But if you can, then you I don't know if you need to do the summations of the types that you know the analysis that you have looked in the past in the heterogeneous string. Now you have to rethink in the presence of brains. I don't know if it is necessary, but I think there are many interesting questions, theoretical questions that can be addressed. And okay, mostly because people who are mostly work in this field come from phenomenology. They don't. They just use effective field theory. So there is a limited, capability of extracting information. I don't want to discourage.
Are you
going to
talk to the fact that the continuum of scale from the lowest, from the smallest range to the TV scale? So,
yeah, you can have a string scale anywhere. No, the motivation is comes from physics. It comes because of the hierarchy. You can replace supersymmetry. At the same level as supersymmetry, you can say nothing more than supersymmetry. So, apart from theoretical prejudice, I don't see any. And maybe this question of unification, which has to be conceptually understood, I don't see.
Well, conceptually, it's fine to say. I mean, in the.
No, at least.
It's a specific scenario, a usual scenario. Conceptually, you have logarithmic running.
Okay,
and
yeah.
You have one number, you know.
Yeah.
Really, it's a big
number. Yeah, yeah, that's it. Yeah. I agree. Yeah.
So you lose that and
Well, I'm not sure that you lose it because you see that the rationale for logarithmic unification exists also in this scheme, but has to for two dimensions.
So you also predict the number two.
Well,